Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us as we will recap all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants over the next 60 minutes. We'll get into the coaching search, five official candidates who have interviewed already. So Paul and I will take you through that. And we'll also review what happened in the NFL postseason over this weekend. All four road teams winning on wild card weekend. So we'll get into that. Not a lot of surprises in terms of that given the amount of parity in the NFL. But we will certainly get into that along the way. Let's start, though, Paul, with the news relevant to the New York Giants. Doug Marrone is the latest individual to interview for the Giants head coaching vacancy. He is the former Buffalo Bills head coach, spent two seasons in Buffalo, 6-10, 9-7, then left because he had a contractual clause. There was also a change in ownership. And this past season, he's been the Jacksonville Jaguars' assistant head coach, as well as their offensive line coach.
Also experience up at Syracuse, too. Yeah. Don't forget that as well. And you know, he's an upstate New York guy, and a lot of people, you know, like the brand of football that those folks produce up there. He's a guy who is known more for his work with his offensive lines wherever he's gone. That's been the strength of what he's left behind wherever he's been. But, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where I would love, if for no other reason, for education purposes, and I mean this 100%, for education purposes, I'd love to be able to listen in on some of these interviews. Because, and I'm not talking about being nosy because, you know, it's the reporters wanting to know what's happening. Just from an educational perspective, I would love to be able to sit in and pick the brains of all of these different football guys to listen to them, their philosophies, their experiences, why they do this, why they do that. Because, you know, the one thing, and I mean this wholeheartedly, that I didn't get to do with Coach Tom Coughlin, despite his 12 years here, I never had the chance, because he either didn't have the time or wasn't inclined to do so, to just sit down for an hour and talk football.
Or didn't want to, too. We should mention that as well.
And for that reason, the interview process, as they're going through these candidates, intrigues me beyond the reporters want to know, okay? I truly, being such a diehard football guy and such an X's and O's guy who lives and breathes this stuff, I would just have a blast talking to these guys about the game. And, you know, I'd like to believe, and you almost have to believe, that if they've been involved in this business at the professional level as a coach, they must have passion for it.
Absolutely.
They must.
Well, especially all the time that they have to put into
right.
their job and so forth.
So I guess what I'm telling you is I don't know Doug Marrone personally, okay? I know everything we've read about him. I know what some of his track record is in terms of the stats, the numbers, some of the characteristics that he presents. He's a my kind of guy, and apparently a little rough around the edges sometimes, can be a little stern, can be a little cold, a little hard, you know, personality-wise. But, you know, he certainly has experience in the league doing what he does. My point, though, is I would just love to be able to soak in all of this stuff.
Well, it's a fascinating process.
It really is.
The questions that you need to ask the candidates to get what you need to from them in terms of their coaching philosophy. Hey, look at the roster. Look at what this team did last season. What can you do to get the team back to winning football? I mean, there's a lot of different things that you could certainly throw out there.
Now,
to get
the
out
other
of
day, I read that a particular head coach candidate, who's a coordinator in this league, went on a head coaching interview, and the interview lasted 8 hours.
Wow. That's something.
8 hours, right? Now, I don't know about you folks out there, but me, I've never been, quote, on the inside of one of those things. I've never sat in on one of them. I've never been able to listen to how they go. And I'd love to know. I would really like to know. So, you know, and maybe at some point I'll be able to get a hold of a front office person who's out of the game now. And I'll be able to say to them, were you ever involved in one of those things? Take me through it. Exactly what types of questions are asked? How's the structure of a head coach's interview? You don't know, do you?
No, not at all. I mean, listen, it could go in any different direction. It depends on the team's vision and so forth.
You know, are they coming in saying, okay, what's your presentation? What's your vision for our team? Have you looked at our team? What do you think our team needs? Do they say, okay, we've looked at what you've done. We're going to question you about where you've been and about what you've done and about what went wrong where you were there at that other place. Why did that go wrong? What did you learn from that? How does this process work? And, you know, because nobody ever talks about that. They only talk about the rumors of Mr. X is coming in, Mr. Y is coming in, Mr. Z is the favorite, Mr. B got a phone call but turned it down. That's all anybody ever talks about. But see, being a hardcore guy, I'm actually interested in the process itself more than I am the names that are floating out there.
Well, and we can open it up to the audience. I think you hit on an interesting topic, Paul. You know, five official candidates, Steve Spagnuolo, Ben McAdoo, Doug Marrone, Terrell Austin, and obviously Adam Gase, who has since been hired as the Dolphins head coach.
Right.
We'll open it up to the fan base. You know, you have an opportunity to sit with these guys face-to-face. What's the most important question that you're asking?
Oh, this is a good show question.
What are you asking? You're sitting next to Doug Marrone. What do you want to know? Do you want to know about the experience in Buffalo? Do you want to know how the Jacksonville offense made huge strides from 2014 to 2015? Certainly something for you to weigh in at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. The other thing I wanted to throw out with respect to Doug Marrone, he actually has connections to the Giants roster, Paul, we should mention. There are three Syracuse players who are currently on the Giants who did play under him when he was at Syracuse. Ryan Nassib, Justin Pugh, as well as Jay Bromley. And Pugh was very complimentary of Doug Marrone on Twitter.
Lineman.
Yes, you can understand. There's a connection there. And we should note, you know, you mentioned his time at Syracuse. He did turn the Syracuse program around. When he took over, you know, Syracuse was in a transitional phase. Buffalo, I mentioned, he's one of three head coaches in Buffalo Bills history who have actually had winning seasons combined in the first 2 years there, if you combine the two seasons record-wise. Wade Phillips and Marv Levy are the other two. So, you know, he had limited experience there, but he had success in a very short period of time. And his defense in Buffalo, remember, him and Jim Schwartz were responsible for turning that defense around. And then you look at what happened when Rex Ryan took over, there has been a disparity. So I think that is something that you need to take into consideration when evaluating him as a candidate.
I think the hardest thing for me when I try to, in my own mind, sort through these guys, you have some kind of preconceived notions about what the guy is because of what you've read in the papers or because of what you've heard from people who worked in that guy's market. Now, for example, I know somebody up in Buffalo who I've yet to actually speak with this week, but he's going to get a call from me in the next day or two. We haven't had a chance to talk yet, and I want to know from him, okay, listen, tell me about what you know about this guy. I mean, you know, for sure. But the thing about it is, when you hear a name, what you don't know is, what were the circumstances under which that guy was working at that previous place? Was he hamstrung by injuries? Was he hamstrung by maybe a head coach who said, no, we're doing things this way, and this is what you're going to have to work on?
Didn't have much flexibility.
I'm not going to give you free rein to call the kinds of defenses that you want. Or if you're talking to an offensive coordinator, hey, guess what? He got to work on the game plans, but he didn't actually call the plays. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, backdoor stuff, that we have no way of knowing.
Absolute politics, too. Yeah.
You know, you have no way of knowing. Did that coach or assistant at some point in his previous job, was he trying to fight for certain players, didn't get them, and then was stuck with guys in the lineup that he didn't want or didn't think he could use? There are so many variables. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think a lot of what you read in the newspapers about, you know, writers who are giving you analysis and giving you definitions of who this guy is, you know what? It's shallow and it's worthless. Seriously, it really is. Because I as much as I'd like to tell you that I'm getting something, and you always want a crumb. You want a crumb to chew on because you want to be able to get something from somebody who's had experience with the guy. But the truth of the matter is, until you actually get to know him some, you don't know him. I mean, I knew who Ray Handley was because he was a running backs coach.
And he was on the staff. Yeah.
I knew who Jim Fassel was. He was quarterback's coach. I knew Tom Coughlin. He was a receiver's coach. I knew all those guys before they got hired as head coaches here. So I knew exactly, you know, what was coming into the door. I did not know Dan Reeves at all.
And well, he came from the outside, though.
Came from the outside.
Yeah.
And it took me a little time to get to know him. But anyway, so don't read anything you see in the papers.
There you go. That sums it up.
Because it's worthless anyway.
Cancel out all the media, apparently, according to Paul DeTito. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. All right, let's open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Freddie is in New Jersey. He gets us going on Monday's edition of the program. Freddie, what's happening?
Hey, not much. How you guys doing?
Hi. Doing well, Freddie.
I'm happy to hear that they're going to potentially bring in Hugh Jackson for an interview. I think he'd be a great fit for this New York football Giants team. If not about Hugh Jackson, I would go with Lovie Smith. Look what he had to work with in Chicago. He took, you know, Rex Grossman to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman. So just get your thoughts on that. And also, like, Pete is on the set of Perfect about Doug Marone. We really don't know him, but what I hear about him, I'm just not a big fan of him. So I would definitely stay away from him. So just get your thoughts on that. And, Lance, thanks for the follow on Twitter yesterday. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem,
that's
Freddie.
That's all I got. And,
all right.
And I'll listen to the comments off there.
Sounds thanks, good. Man. And appreciate the interaction. One thing I did want to mention about Doug Marone, and you alluded to this, and Freddie obviously just mentioned this, you know, and this goes back to what you're hearing in the media, what you heard about his departure from Buffalo. And we don't need to analyze and break down the specifics, but big picture perspective, there was a contractual clause that
yes.
Doug Marone had.
Yes.
And he had the option to exit from his contract to pursue other opportunities in the event that ownership changes. Ownership changed, he elected to exercise that clause. But to say that he quit on the team, he didn't care about the team, I mean, that's reading between the lines and interpreting it to the 10th degree when we don't know enough.
No.
Unless you know Doug Marone personally or you know somebody within the organization who could provide a little bit more insight.
Suffice it to say, that would be part of the interview conversation.
Correct, absolutely. But from the outside looking in, I looked at that, Paul. If I was to see that factual evidence laid out, and I remember when the story broke, I looked at it as a guy had an option from a business perspective. Maybe it was a personal decision from a family perspective, and he did whatever was comfortable for him. You have a clause. I mean, that's business. That's not necessarily, you know, quitting on the team.
Let's put it this way. If the clause was in his contract, that means at some point before he signed it, he thought that that was important
correct.
Enough
he was
to
anticipating
have.
That because of the uncertainty of ownership in Buffalo.
You know?
Yeah.
And I can honestly tell you that he's not the first head coach in the National Football League or pro sports anywhere who was concerned that if ownership changed, my conditions and circumstances would change to such a degree that there's a chance I might not want to be here.
And you can say that about any talent contract, on-air talent. You know, you have an agent that works out clauses to protect yourself. That's business. I mean, that's not anything that's rare in terms of the circumstances of any contractual breakdown. Freddie also threw out Lovie Smith and Hugh Jackson. Now, Hugh Jackson, nothing is official from the Giants' perspective. Let's keep that in mind. I mean, he obviously is the Bengals' offensive coordinator who is no longer coaching anymore because the Bengals' season is over. And then Lovie Smith just parted ways with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're
right.
Now heading in a different direction.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that you could do in terms of Lovie, he's been out there now for a few days, right? I mean, since the Buccaneers decided they were going to jettison him. And to this point, I have not heard of him taking any interviews with anyone.
I have not either, yeah.
So I don't know if he's going to take some time off because, again, I haven't heard anything scheduled. You would think that he probably would have started making phone calls right away if he wanted to stay on the horse. So I don't know the answer to that. And then, B, you have to decide how much experience in an NFL head coaching job is relevant to your search. He certainly has a lot of experience.
Absolutely.
And if that's going to be a heavy-duty requirement, then you probably would want to talk to him. If it's not a top priority, then maybe you don't. I mean,
And John Mara said during the press conference after the season, they're not necessarily just looking for candidates who have head coaching experience. They're
correct.
Trying to keep it as wide open as possible, and you should. That's how you do your due diligence. I agree with you. When you look at Lovie Smith's resume, head coaching experience screams out at you because he's led
a number of different teams.
Also, he's widely respected by both players and coaches across the NFL landscape, similar to the coach that you just parted ways with, Tom Coughlin. So if you're looking for the same principles, the same type of culture, I think Lovie can bring that to the table.
I mean, you know, I think in every situation here, you have to prioritize what are the qualities, characteristics, and things that you need to see on the resume before you even decide if you're going to make that phone call and bring a guy in for an interview. Some guys, you just say, hey, you know what? He's got number two, he's got number six, and number seven on my list. That's not enough to make me take him for an interview. And that's how it works, you know? You gotta kind of meet the checklist to some degree to where they feel comfortable to even bring you in and sit you down, because otherwise why would you do it?
And since he just left Tampa Bay, it could be a matter of he's just now assessing his situation.
Does he
want to take a year off? Does he want to automatically go to another team? I mean, it may come more from his side than necessarily the team side. You don't know what happens in terms of the conversations behind closed doors. And also keep in mind, you know, this is the second week of interviews for the Giants. They're now entering the second week. Last week was the first week. Now, in terms of logistics, because I know probably a number of you, and I can see the names on Twitter, this past week, Paul, was the week where if you wanted to interview an assistant on a team that was on bye in the postseason, this was the week to do it. Starting today, you now need to get permission from that team if you want to interview a candidate. So I'm talking about Carolina, Arizona, Denver, and New England. You now have to seek permission from that team if you want to interview one of their assistants moving forward.
You also must understand the league owners' meetings start tomorrow in Houston.
That's a good point as well.
And that's going to complicate matters, I'm sure, for a number of owners and a number of candidates, because you have to figure out, okay, who has time to do the interview? Logistically, where are you located? Where am I located? Maybe we can meet somewhere. There's a lot of stuff that's got to get sorted through now.
Well, and with John Mara involved in the process, he's going to be involved in the owners' meeting. So from a logistical standpoint, it may be difficult to hammer out an interview or two while those owner meetings are going on. You at least need to keep that into consideration when you're trying to evaluate maybe what the timeline may be in terms of them making a decision. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Ozzie in New York. Ozzie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Look, I don't move as forward as maybe other people. For me, Ray Henley era just started last Tuesday as Coach Coughlin was let go. I mean, tell me if there's a better coach available than Coughlin. You know, look at his resume. That's why Eagles will give him the job, guys. And that's what scares me. And I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me that the change was necessary because, you know, after a while, maybe players tune you out. Not in this era of free agency, guys. I mean, tell me, besides Eli, Cruz, Diasi, and JPP, who do you have on this roster since 2011? So I don't want to hear any excuses. I think Ray Henley era just has begun, Giant fans, and Jerry Reese has made no – I mean, you know how I feel. I don't want to keep beating the same drum. He should have been the one showing the door, not Tom Coughlin.
All right, Ozzie, appreciate the phone call. We know what Ozzie has said in the past. He doesn't necessarily have to remind us. In terms of Tom Coughlin, there are rumors, there's speculation that he will be interviewing with the Philadelphia Eagles today. He's entitled to pursue whatever opportunities he wants. I mean, he's a free agent at this point, like any other player who's going to be testing the market.
You know, I think what you have to understand is whatever happened here, the situation is what it is, and you have to move forward. And no one's going to say that you're replacing somebody or succeeding somebody with someone better. That's not what's being said here. What's being said is you have to move forward with the reality of what it is, and you just need someone who's going to succeed in this spot. No one's trying to say that the next head coach is better than Coach Coughlin. No one's trying to say that. What they're saying is the Giants need to fill a spot, and they need to win. That's all they're saying.
That's priority number one. Yeah, I mean, they're not necessarily in the business of comparing Tom Coughlin to the next candidate. I don't think you can do that. I don't think you want to put the next coach in that position.
Why would
Paul.
You?
I mean, why would you want to be in the shadows of what Coughlin accomplished and what he was all about? I mean, I think that's an immense amount of pressure that that next coach is going to face. He's got to come in with his own identity, his own game plan, and then they got to move forward.
This is not about comparing people, saying who's better and who's not. This is about getting things on track and getting back to the playoffs. That's what this is about.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Scott in New York. Scott, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Hope everything's well.
Hi.
I have a couple things I'd like to say. And, Paul, I realize I'm dating myself to a little bit of old school with the Giants. I believe with Tom, they felt they had to make a change, or Tom decided it was time to move on, Tom Kaufman. But I believe in analyzing things here. I think you would agree with me. To build a winning team, you build with the core you draft. And the last 5 years, the core of the draft the Giants have, they've had more busts than success stories. I'll just give one example, David Wilson. Now, here's where I'm really dating myself. David Wilson had the production of a Rocky Thompson, who was a great athlete, but not really a good skilled player. And this is the number one draft pick here. So I'm just using this one as one example. There's
well,
many
David
more.
Wilson's college resume was a heck of a lot better than Rocky Thompson's, to be fair. I mean, seriously. Honestly,
okay.
You can't compare their college careers. David Wilson was a true star college player at the Division I level at a very high-level program. Rocky Thompson, he was a track star coming out of college.
What is David Wilson, truthfully? I mean, you know, what's, you know,
he gained a lot of yards at Vatek. David Wilson had a legitimate college resume. Seriously, you can't compare those two guys. Come on.
Well,
to be fair.
Well, let's be fair also here. You know, Kaufman was left holding the bag here. And to a certain extent.
Well, I'm not telling you that the Giants overstocked with draft picks from the last 5 years. You can look at those numbers yourself and tell me how few those numbers are. That's not debatable. Those facts are facts. John Mara himself said there aren't enough third, fourth, and fifth-year players on this roster. The owner of the team has already acknowledged that. But I'm not going to let you compare David Wilson to Rocky Thompson.
Okay.
That's where I'm drawing the line.
Okay. Let's move a little further if I can ask, please.
Okay.
What the draft picks here, what I'm trying to say, the draft picks, like I'll use the Seattle Seahawks, for example, and give credit where credit's due. They built a great team with the middle-round draft picks. I think Bobby Wagner wasn't a high draft pick, but he's a hell of a linebacker.
Well, Richard Sherman was a fifth-round pick. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, Scott. No disagreement. You know, part of the way the NFL structure works, especially since you can't sign everybody and bring back all your free agents, you need to make inroads in the draft. And that's why Seattle has been successful in putting together this run, because a lot of those guys that they drafted in the fifth, the sixth, even the seventh round have not just been bench guys. They've been starters, and they've gone on to win Pro Bowl appearances and so forth. So, I mean, yes, that's the ideal game plan. Unfortunately, with respect to the Giants, due to injuries and other situations, you know, they haven't been as fortunate as Seattle played out.
Well, my question, that I guess what I'm trying to say here is that, and maybe Will Tamara might have had a different approach than Tamara, I mean, Mr. Tamara right now currently there, and I got the name
John
up there. Please bear with me.
Yeah, John's the one there now.
John, thank you for correcting me.
That's okay.
I think, honestly, Senior would have looked at it a little differently. If it was the clean house, I think he would have went in the direction of, okay, we haven't had a winning record. The formula we have to make something different. We have to make some changes. I would have thought they would have went with both Mr. Reese and Mr. Kaufman going at the same time, truthfully. Because both of them, I think, they worked, the way it was described at the press conference, hand in hand, it wasn't just Tom Kaufman. I have to look at the management, what they've done, and Mr. Reese here too. I think he shares responsibility.
I don't think Jerry Reese shunned it when he said, "I am responsible and fully responsible for this roster." I think that he said that himself. Here's what I would say to you, though, in terms of what your theory is. And I'm not saying I disagree or agree with what they've done, but what I will say is this: when you make sweeping changes and you get rid of a GM and a head coach, and you're of the peace of mind of the Giants organization where they are two separate entities and they're not going to be the same, You're not going to get a situation where Mike Holmgren went into Seattle and he's the GM and the coach. That's not what you have here. You have a situation where they are two distinct positions, and they're not going to be held by the same guy. So now, let's say you get rid of two men. You've got to replace two of the most important people in your organization. And you're in a scramble trying to do interviews, not just for one job, but for two. And how does the GM job get filled, you know, when you're still trying to find a coach and vice versa? So obviously what you do in that situation is you got to go for the GM first. Well, now, how quickly do they have to hustle to get that GM in place? Because you know the coaching candidates are being bantered around the league
and
trying to fill spots. So it creates a logistical set of difficulties that you have to go through. It makes your life a lot harder. Now, I'm not telling you it's right or wrong, but what I am saying is that's an entirely different search or seeking out process, because now you got to fill two instead of one.
And, Scott, the other thing that I'll add to that, and we will let you continue. I didn't mean to cut you off. The other thing you need to take into consideration, and I'm not saying that you're not bringing up valid points and so forth. Since 1947, keep in mind, Scott, the Giants have had five general managers. So you have to take that into consideration, because what that does is that spells out the track record, Paul, of the organization, that they are extremely patient when it comes to front office people, and they're not necessarily in the business of just turnover after turnover. Ray Walsh, Andy Robustelli, George Young, Ernie Accorsi, Jerry Reese. Five general managers since 1947.
Wellington Mara was a pseudo GM as an owner
certainly,
for many years.
But that just goes to show you, Paul, the old school mentality.
No question.
About how ownership is tied into the scouting process, and that provides stability at the top and so forth. So when you take that into consideration, Scott, I mean, I think that perhaps spells out what their game plan has been for decades, where they're not the type of organization that just makes change for the sake of change or so forth.
Well, here's what I'd like to add, this gentleman. Maybe the times have changed, and what I'm looking at here, Paul, and you raise a valid point, because of the free agencies, because of the way the market has changed in the game today, and it's not as many years ago, as you said, Lance, how it's the structure's been, and it still currently is. Is it time now to start looking? Doesn't mean tomorrow, but possibly down the line to change from that culture, or the. To go into where it's under one umbrella, where it's like a Bill Belichick. I mean, let's face it, he's a guru. He's been very successful.
A unique situation for sure.
But I'm saying
unique.
I believe there's a lot of talent out there that could do it. And maybe this, not tomorrow, but maybe they will have to look at this, the owners of this great, great organization, and I'm a diehard fan. And to give you an example, I was very fortunate for my 60th birthday to be at the game against Carolina, and I almost pulled it out, and I'm like going crazy with the rest of the thousands of fans there. But I mean, again, it's a structure where I believe you build from within, but I believe if it's got to change because the times are changing, maybe you have to look at that. And I'm nothing against personal against Mr. Reese or anything else. I just think in this, the perception here is that it looks like it maybe goes to the territory. The coach was here left holding the bag to an extent. That's how I look at it there. You guys have a great show.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate that.
I appreciate what you bring to the table, because every time you talk, it brings me back to about the old school days, and I appreciate that. And
Thanks,
it's phenomenal,
man.
And that's what makes the show that great.
I enjoy very much talking about those things.
Thanks
Thank
so
you
much
for calling, and please call again. You know, the one thing that you talked about with the history and tradition of the franchise, and again, the guy makes a good point. Scott's saying, you know, at some point you maybe consider changing, because maybe the game evolves and maybe you have to evolve. That's always a very gut-wrenching type of thing that you have to consider. As a franchise that has done many and many good things over the years, especially in the last 10 years, consider the Giants with their two Super Bowls, 42 and 46. And you have to say, well, at what point do we think maybe the game, the actual structure of what's happened with the NFL, has altered to a degree where we might have to consider doing business a bit differently? You know, I know we've won this and this and this, but we also haven't done this and this and this. You know, where do you start to make not just tweaks to personnel or people in the positions, but the actual structure of your organization? That's a really, really hard thing to do.
Especially if you've been going by one game plan for decades. But John Mara actually hinted at what you just touched on and what Scott was hinting at. And he mentioned that his end-of-the-season press conference, you know, we have to start to reevaluate.
The personnel department.
But even beyond that, Paul, also how we grade players. You know, what is it that we are actually putting a lot of stock and substance in? Is it the 40-yard dash? Is it how much the guy lifts in terms of weights? Is it his speed? Is it his mental test and his mental capacity and so forth?
Yeah.
I mean, those are the types of things that I think he also hinted at that they need to start to evaluate based on the track record and the results in the draft.
Yeah, he raised a lot of those questions at the podium himself and said, we're evaluating this now and we're trying to figure out what has to change, if anything. It's a lot of responsibility being an owner of an NFL team. I will tell you now, I don't think I'd want to do it. I really don't.
Boy,
I'd much rather
says a lot. If you say you don't want to take a job in the NFL.
To be an NFL owner? To be an NFL owner? No. No. It's no. I would never sleep. I don't sleep much now anyway.
You don't sleep anyway. Exactly.
But I would never sleep if I was an NFL owner.
And I think you'd be okay surviving, to be honest with you.
It's a very, 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 not only hard, stressful, and gut-wrenching job, it can be very painful at times, too.
But you have experience in all of those departments in terms of all of those emotions, Paul. So you actually have the ideal resume. Plus, you have the scouting background, the film background, the diehard capacity, the emotions.
Oh,
I don't understand why you're so down on yourself in terms of that. With that being said, let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Rafael is in Virginia. Rafael, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
How you doing? I just want to talk a little bit about, like, the whole Crawford situation. Jerry Reese. After seeing Jerry Reese's, like, press conference, I really thought that he should have went after that conference. I didn't really think it was a strong, like, what he said, really. I don't know. Like, it didn't pop out. I don't know how to explain it. Like, you know, like, when he was talking, it was something that I didn't really feel like, you know, they should have faith in him. But I feel like they were talking about Tom Coughlin maybe doing something else. And if he's not going to coach, I think maybe they should try to give him a GM position because he likes to go to the drafts and do the, you know, the stuff on the players and stuff, the 40s and all that.
At the combine,
So that might be something good for Coughlin, you know, and that way he could stay in New York and him and his family could, you know, stay in New York and not have to move again. But I think maybe that would be a good option for Tom Coughlin.
Well, Rafael, keep in mind that, and we'll let you continue, John Mara did say at his end of the season press conference, there's an offer on the table for Tom Coughlin to have some type of a role in the front office. What that is remains to be seen. That's, of course, assuming he doesn't get a coaching opportunity elsewhere. But they're already starting to think down the road that you're laying out right now.
Yeah, I just think that GM position would be pretty ideal for him, personally. But on another note, like a lot of the free agents and stuff that he picked up and all that, you know, I felt like wasn't really that great. And I feel like sometimes Giants organization sometimes makes like some mistakes. And I'm not trying to like, I don't really like, I know it's not my part to be saying that maybe because I'm not in the organization, I don't know how it runs and stuff, never play football and stuff. But just like being a fan of Giants and stuff, I see a lot of times like you'll trade like for John Beeson. Not that John Beeson's a bad player. But you're trading a third round pick, or I forgot what it was.
It was a seven.
It was much later than that.
Oh, was it?
It was a seven for John Beeson. And you know what? What'd he do? He came in, and the first week he played, he led the team in tackles in a Monday night game in Chicago and brought that defense to a whole nother level that first year he was here. They were a top 10 defense with him.
And I remember that first game he played against the Chicago Bears, if I'm correct,
Paul. 15 tackles that
night? Yeah, and then he had that big red zone stop where it looked like Chicago was going to punch it in. So, I mean, immediately he made an impact. Unfortunately, you know, the injury bug got the better of him again.
So how did you guys feel about, like, the Landon Collins trade? Because we gave up a draft pick that year. We could have had another extra draft pick to help
I don't out. Think there's any question that Landon Collins showed as a rookie. He's got a lot of upside. I think he's going to be here a long time. God willing that he doesn't hurt himself like Kenny Phillips did. you know, because I think he's going to be a very good player for quite a number of years with the Giants. And so you're going to have to wait and see sometime down the road before you truly make an evaluation as to whether or not that trade was worth it. But I have a hunch right now that it probably is going to turn out okay because I think he's good.
I got a question. Would you not have been happy if we had picked up Jurowski Tart or like Adrian Amos like later in the rounds? Instead of like, you know, instead of trading up and giving up a pick.
Again, I think the best thing to do is to wait 5 or 6 years before you get concrete about it. You got to wait 5 or 6 years and then say, yes, it was a good deal. No, it was not a good deal. I'm just telling you right now, my hunch is that it will be. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't change my mind in 5 or 6 years if Collins flames out.
Yeah, Raphael, I would agree with Paul. I think, you know, when you start to compare draft picks after just 1 year, 16 games, it's very difficult. I mean, you got to see more of a sample size before you start to say, well, maybe you could have went in this direction versus that direction. I mean, Collins, let's put things in perspective. Okay, he played all 16 games. Okay, that's number one, which is a positive. He was the first Giants rookie safety to ever do that in franchise history, too. And yes, it may be a limited sample size, but you got him a lot of experience early on. You got his feet wet, and I think he showed that when he plays down in the box, you know, he's a very effective guy in terms of getting into the lanes and stopping the run. You know, clearly there's room for improvement like any other young player, but we got to see that development over the next 3 or 4 years before we start to say, you know, this didn't necessarily work out.
You think he's more of a safety or a linebacker?
I think he's a strong safety.
I think he's a dual threat type of guy. That's the way that I look at it. I mean, I think he could survive as a linebacker in this league, depending on how you utilize him. I think he's got the intangibles, but clearly right now the Giants need him as a safety. That's exactly what they need him at, because that's the position right now that they need some playmakers, and Landon Collins has an opportunity to make a big impact moving forward. So that's the position that I think he's needed for this team, but I could see him being sort of a jack-of-all-trades where he could be very effective in the box as well.
What do you think, like, next year, if all the safeties that we had go down that they, you know, had high hopes for, if these guys start playing good next year, and maybe we can – not, like, put him in a full role as a linebacker, but definitely, like, in sub-packages, you know, definitely use him in that linebacker position.
Well, of the six safeties who are currently under contract to the Giants right now, they've got a combined total of 16 starts between them. All 16 are Collins' starts. So for you right now to ask me to handicap the safety spot, all I'm going to tell you is Landon Collins will be one of them. And I'm not going anywhere else with that other safety spot because it's wide open.
Would that work?
It is wide open right now, and they've got a lot of work to do, and they know that. And certainly safety's got to be one of the primary areas of need.
And, Raphael, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And I think the other part of his question was about, you know, how they fit into the scheme. But here's the thing. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with the coaching staff, Paul. To say what happened last year with respect to scheme could drastically change coming into next season. So it's really in the point of speculation if you're to say, well, if we put this guy back into the system next season, we don't know what type of scheme or system they're going to run until the coaching staff gets settled.
Look, I will say one thing. The fact that Collins played all 16 games is a good sign in terms of his durability.
Absolutely. That's why I emphasize
which right now
that.
Gives him a big up on anybody else.
Of course, given some of the injuries that they've had to deal with and the experience factor. I mean, I want my rookie to come in year number one. And I'll say the same thing about Ereck Flowers, Paul. You know, Ereck Flowers missed one game this year, and he played through a number of injuries, but your rookie comes in. He's a high draft pick. I mean, your first-round pick and your second-round pick this year, they each had 15 and 16 respective starts.
And I will tell you this. I have seen rookies over the years who had a little bit of that deer in headlights look to where it did take them time to assimilate. It did take them time to get used to being pros. And I'm not just talking about the X's and the O's because you know they're going to make rookie mistakes on the field. Those things will happen. But Ereck Flowers and Landon Collins, neither one of these guys shied away from being part of this team as rookies. They didn't whimper in the corner and kind of like look and say, well, I'm trying to feel my way. No, no. They were like, okay, let's go. I want to practice. I want to play. I want to be part of this. I want to be a starter. These guys were both very aggressive in their attitudes about being gamers. They were not shying away from any responsibilities. They were not shying away from getting out there and getting their hands dirty and learning what it is that they have to learn to become good NFL players. I, for one, like those kinds of guys on my team.
well, especially Flowers. I mean, I would put him at the top of the list. And even Tom Coughlin said throughout the season, Paul, you know, there are players that he's seen that have had similar injuries, and they're out 3 to 4 weeks. Yeah. And Flowers, 2 days later, he wants to practice. So I think that says it all about his capacity to play through injuries and his toughness. Let's head back to the lines here. We got Abdul in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Yeah, I'm finally defrosting after yesterday.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but, you know, misery loves company. I was watching with a bunch of Vikings fans. And it made me feel a little better after, you know, our year. You know, I'm lucky just to see, you know, the other fans could suffer as much as we did. So, anyway.
That was a rough one for Blair Walsh, certainly.
Yeah, it was a rough one.
And I don't think Bengals fans feel much better right now either.
Tough one for them as well.
Bengals fans are feeling the same thing. That's what's happening with this league.
Go
back to Coach Coughlin's statement. More games in this league are lost rather than won. It's infuriating to me as an NFL guy to watch games and to see teams throw them in the trash as opposed to having other teams beat them. That really ticks me off. I don't enjoy that at all.
Yeah, as a fan, I'd rather get blown out by 38 points than lose, you know, than lose one by mistakes. But anyway, I didn't call about that. I meant to call about I was wondering after listening to the press conferences last week and just thinking about, you know, the state of the union of the Giants, about what metrics the Giants use to decide that this team would be better off going in a different direction and keeping Jerry Reese. And this morning I woke up and I read a really interesting article about Jerry Reese's track record and about ESPN. And they looked at the numbers, I think the past 5 years, and they looked at that the Jerry Reese's draft picks have played 6,000 less snaps than the average other NFL team, meaning that they either were bust or through injury. And that's kind of a real figure to look at how unproductive our drafts have been and how a detriment to that, you know, that's been to our success. And to me, that's a real metric. That's a real number to be like, this is what's going on with our team. I'm trying to figure out if there's an equivalent for getting rid of a head coach that we could point out that Tom Coughlin lost us, you know, his decisions or whatever, lost us, you know, a certain amount of, you know, games. Is there something that we could, you know, compare the two to? Does that make any sense?
I don't know that in my own mind there is any mathematical equation that justifies either keeping or getting rid of a head coach. Some people will tell you that wins and losses, that's the bottom line. That's all that matters. Personally, for me, it's not. I think there are always many, many layers to that onion. And I think it's incredibly shallow to just look at someone's one-loss record and say he's a good head coach or he's not a good head coach. The game is far too complex for me to go that way.
Yeah. Because I wake up today, and I know he's gone. He's not coming back. But I still wake up, and I'm trying to find the objective. I don't understand how him leaving makes us a better team. I just don't get it. But I know he's gone, and I really hope that we get Hugh Jackson. I think he's a good man. I think I like the way he runs the offense of the Bengals. But that being said, I still don't understand the logic behind firing a Tom Coughlin and how that will make us a better team. I'm just trying to understand the logic.
Abdul, you know, I'm going to take you back to what I said about 10 minutes ago. This isn't about comparing anyone to Coach Coughlin. This isn't about who's better and who's not.
I'm not saying this is
about a situation that has occurred, a reality that is, and how the Giants are going to improve their situation and become a playoff team again. That's all it's about. Please don't compare apples and oranges now because you can't.
No, I'm not comparing. As I said, I'm trying to figure out how Coughlin leaving makes us that better team. That's all I'm asking. I'm saying how does him leaving make us become a playoff team?
Well, Abdul, the thing is, we're not going to be able to answer that question until we see what happens in the draft and in the offseason. I mean, it's a good question. I'm not saying there's no substance behind that question. Yeah. But for us to answer that right now, I can't. How can I give you a rational answer when I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason? Because here's the other thing, Abdul, and I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. The other part of this equation here is, you know, it's not just the coach. that, you know, makes a team successful. Remember, you need the pieces in place to also, you need the ball to bounce your way. So that's why there's a number of factors, which is what Paul was touching on. That onion's got a lot of layers, and those layers have yet to be expanded or laid out for us to determine what this team is going to be made up of come next season.
Yeah, I get that. And I wasn't going to call it until literally, I'm about to start lunch here, and I opened up my phone and I read the article from ESPN, and they kind of laid out, you know, where Jerry Reese has gone, but the front office has gone wrong, you know, the past, you know, four or five drafts. You see numbers of where the draft picks haven't performed, and it's made me think of, you know, about Coach. But anyway, listen, we've had a couple of really bad years, and I'm really looking forward to see what happens this offseason. I think it's a really important offseason, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years for this organization. And, you know, I'm a huge Giants fan. I've been watching him since 78, you know, since I was a really young kid. And I'm really looking forward to this offseason because, as I said, it's really important. And I'm sure I'll be talking to you guys throughout this offseason. Take care, guys.
Appreciate you the phone call. I mean, you should note that you have some catching up to do compared to when Paul started rooting for this team. So, Abdul, I mean, I give you credit for your year, but remember, you know, the rankings here, you're a little bit low on the totem pole. With that being said, remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Jeff in New Hampshire. Jeff, what's happening?
Not much. How are you guys today?
Hi. Doing well, Jeff.
Good. You actually already made one of the points I kind of wanted to make. I was listening to some of the calls, and they're talking about finding somebody better than Coughlin. That was kind of the first thing I wanted to say when I called, is you're not trying to find somebody better than Coughlin. You're just trying to find the next coach that can win for us.
Yep.
It's really not about a better coach. I kind of wanted to make that point, but you guys
very good
that for me. So,
yes, sir.
Just thinking about the next coach, and obviously they've only made so many official interviews, and I've been playing what I want out of the coach, me personally as a fan, what I would like to see, and I still can't make up my mind, so I'm just kind of curious your take on a couple schools of thought. And one school of thought is I don't want a first-year head coach. I want somebody with head coaching experience.
Okay.
Given the fact that we're, in my opinion, we're kind of in a win-now mode. You know what I mean? We've only got so many years where Eli's got good years left. And obviously he's playing at a very high level now. But as athletes get older, it doesn't take long for it to fall off. You know, you look at Peyton Manning. 2 years ago, he set in every NFL record. This year, he can barely throw the ball. So it can happen real quick with a quarterback. And
okay, so is that priority number one on your list? Is that number one, he's got to have NFL head coaching experience? Or can he have major Division I experience?
Well, see, that's where I'm trying to decide for myself, and that's why I'm kind of curious. I'm not a huge fan of college coaches coming into pro first time.
You know, nor am I, to be honest with you.
I feel like not that many do. It's such a different game. So I feel like I'm leaning towards I want head coaching experience, but at the same time, somebody that's got head coaching experience, he probably just got fired. There's probably a reason for it, and there are some good assistant coaches out there that just haven't had a chance yet to prove it. So I don't know which way I'm leaning. I'm wondering if, you know, how you feel about either thought.
Well, let me say this. You know, the Giants have had three different head coaches take them to Super Bowls. Bill Parcells,
right,
and Tom Coughlin, who were 2-0 in their appearances in the championship game, and Jim Fossil, who was 0-1. Now, Jim Fossil had not been a head coach until the Giants gave him the keys to their franchise. He had been a quarterback's coach. He had been an offensive assistant in a number of places. And so his first head coaching job at this level was the Giants. And
same with Parcells, right?
Well, Parcells, same thing. He had been a defensive assistant for many, many years. And then suddenly they elevated him to head coach. And what happens? He turned this thing around in a couple of years and he did it. So the question becomes, if it's someone who does not have NFL head coaching experience, are you willing to go for someone who's had at least coaching NFL experience? Has he been a coordinator? Has he been an assistant at the NFL level? Or are you willing to expand the search to someone who's been very successful in the NCAAs? See, that's where the line is drawn for me. I'm not if it's me. And again, I told you, I don't want to be an NFL owner.
Yes.
If it's me, I am not touching anybody who has not been in the NFL before, at least at some level. If he was an assistant, he better have been an assistant for a long time. If he was a coordinator, he better have had at least 2 or 3 years of coordinating experience. And if he's had NFL head coaching experience, all the better. But I'm not, in my mind, I'm going right to that list and saying, if he has not coached in the NFL, at least at some level, he's not on my list. I'm not talking to him.
Well, and Jeff, if you look at the five candidates right now. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I agree 100% with that. I think college and NFL are just two different games, two different types of player, person. There's so many differences we go on forever about. I think I'm 100%. It's got to be NFL experience.
Hi, Jeff.
I totally agree with
that. Well, appreciate the phone call. I was going to say.
One question real quick?
Sure, real quick.
One name I'm real interested in, I'm just curious what your take is on him, is the Carolina defensive coordinator.
Sean McDermott.
I think the thing I'm leaning towards is the coach has got to be defensive-minded because our defense is our biggest problem right now. And that's somebody, I think he's got kind of an old-school toughness mentality. So I'm just curious your take on him, if he becomes an option or not.
Well, you're referring to Sean McDermott, Jeff, and appreciate the phone call. McDermott comes from that Jim Johnson pedigree, who was the former Eagles defensive coordinator, and McDermott was the Eagles defensive coordinator after that. He's familiar with the NFC East. I mean, he doesn't have any head coaching experience, and he's actually from the same pedigree as Steve Spagnuolo,
yes.
Technically, Paul, because he's also a Jim Johnson disciple. When you look at it. So, I mean, you have sort of that presence, that taste already in-house, I would make the argument.
I would say this. If you're going to go to a defensive guy, then it certainly makes it easier for you to potentially keep at least one or two of your offensive assistants who have had success with Eli here, whether it be Coach McAdoo or even quarterbacks coach Mike Sullivan. It would make it easier to do that because, as you know, the Giants have said they're not going to force the new head coach, if he's coming from the outside, to retain any of the assistants. They will strongly suggest that, hey, take a look at these guys because this is what they've done. They'll do that, but they're not going to force an outside head coach to come in here and take those guys on. So you have to believe that at least some of these candidates have people who they want to
Correct.
Bring in and may not want to retain anybody.
Well, but you do bring up a good point because if we're just going to use Sean McDermott as an example, remember, Spags and McDermott were on the same Philadelphia Eagles coaching staff.
Yes.
So they go back. So your point about if you brought somebody in who even has ties already to a McAdoo or a Spags, I'd say the chances increase that you maintain continuity on the coaching staff, specifically perhaps on the offensive side of the ball, like you said, because if you're a defensive-minded head coach, maybe you don't have an offensive guy in place. You look at how well the Giants performed over the last few seasons. You say, hey, if it ain't broke, I don't necessarily have to fix it
right.
or revamp it. Let's go with this philosophy, make some tweaks. So that could be part of the thought process if you went in that direction. Want to try to squeeze in as many callers as possible. Charlie is in Maine. I don't know if we wanted to squeeze him in, but he's next on the list. Charlie, what's happening?
Thanks, Lance.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, P-Dot.
Hi.
Hey, I got a scenario for you.
Oh,
I know,
boy.
Paul, you won't like this scenario. But
oh, boy.
This is a scenario. Now, the way I look at it, Tom Coughlin just interviewed with the Eagles, and what ESPN has been saying, that he wowed them, that he's in the mix for head coaching position. Say if this happens, Tom Coughlin gets the head coaching position in Philly, and McAdoo doesn't get the head coaching position in New York. I think he would leave and he would go to Philly, realizing they're going to bring in a new head coach, and he's not going to get a chance to be head coach here. So now you've lost your offensive coordinator, your old coach, and then just to throw a little caveat, a little something on this, maybe they would want to trade for Eli and bring him over. I know that's an outrageous scenario.
It is an outrageous scenario, so let's throw that one out of the books. I mean, there's no point in even commenting on that one. We'll continue to hear you out. Go to choice number four now, just to appease to us, okay?
Well, I don't think the first two is too much of a
I didn't
threat.
Say the first
the
two are ridiculous,
one.
But number three I'm crossing off the list. I gave you two, Charlie. I'm not giving you three. Let's go to number four. What's number four here?
Number four is I think we need a defensive coach. That's where our emphasis needs to be. We need – our defense is the problem. Our offense is okay, a little tweaking here and there. Even if McAdoo isn't back, if Sullivan ends up being the coordinator, I think Eli will be fine with that. But we need a defensive coach. So that's what I hope – they bring in is a defensive coach. If they don't go with Spags, who has defensive experience, to bring in a defensive coach. So I don't know who's out there for a defensive coach besides McDermott. I think everybody else is pretty much offensive coaches that I see. But I hope we do bring in somebody like that. But, you know, to me it's like if two things. If we don't stop these injury-prone years that we've had, it ain't going to matter who our coach is because, you know, we're going to have another 30 guys on the IR, which is not going to help. And so that is a big thing, and we have to get some great free agents in here this year to make up for all the holes we got. So I'm hoping Jerry Reese is going to change the way he's been doing things and really look at things differently and really pick some players that are really going to turn this around. So I think free agency is the key because the draft is the draft, and we're not – you're not going to do a quick turnover with the draft because it takes time, but you can with some free agents. So I just hope that happens. So anyway, but you heard it here first.
Yes.
If this happens, TC goes to Philly, and McAdoo follows him, you never know what can happen from that point. I'm out. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Charlie, appreciate the phone call. I want to bring the conversation back to reality. His last point about the importance of the draft and free agency, I mean, that certainly has some validity to it, and it is going to be a critical offseason, Paul,
John
when you look
Maris
at this roster.
They need players.
Absolutely.
You said it. We need a lot of players. They got a lot of holes to fill.
But in terms of his point about the draft, what Charlie just brought up, I mean, you've started to build up this offensive line through the draft. You brought in Odell Beckham. I mean, there are pieces to build on top of that you've brought in the draft, Eric Flowers, Landon Collins. So, I mean, you could still make some inroads in the draft. I wouldn't say the emphasis is just purely on free agency this offseason. You want to have another strong draft so that over these last few years you could say we're getting that nucleus back together that we could build around moving forward.
I mean, nobody's happy with what's happened the last couple of years record-wise, but I don't think the cupboard is bare. I mean, I've seen Giants teams that won 2 and 3 games in a season. I know what that's like. Okay, this team is not at the very bottom of the Lincoln Tunnel. Okay, they're not with the muck of the Hudson River now. Okay, and I'm, I'm just pulling an analogy out here, but it's not like that. I mean, there are some people here, some players here, that a lot of teams would like to have. So,
all right, let's head back to the phone lines. We want to squeeze in at least two more. Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Len. How's everything with you?
Hey, I'll try to be quick, but I just can't ignore Paul's last statement there. Paul, we're going to disagree on this. On defense, the cupboard's bare.
Oh, I disagree. DRC
just
had a sensational season.
Robert
Ayers had a good season.
I really do think, and we can talk at length at another time. On landing, I want to say something
Landon
about Landon
Collins. Big ups.
Two schools of thought. Paul, using your 6-year threshold on judging a draft pick, if this guy starts for 6 years, it was a great pick. If you can get a guy in a draft, I don't care where you draft him, if you can get a guy in 2016 who's going to start for you for the next 6 years, it's a great pick, Paul. Now, the other side of the coin with Collins, in my opinion, if we had to do it over again, and to use Lance's analysis of Collins' strength and in-the-box strong safety, you probably don't trade up in the second round and lose your fourth-round pick to make that choice. But, hey, he's part of the future. He's one of the guys we need to look for improvement from
Len,
if this defense is going
to
get better.
I have to ask you. No, you have to. Stop because you just went someplace you can't go. You want
where's
to be.
That?
You want.
Where,
you want
that,
to.
Ball?
You want to be retrospective. Well, let me ask you something. Landon Collins started 16 games at safety this year. If you did not get Landon Collins, who would have been the Giants' 2 starting safeties in the 16 games this season? Who
well, at that point, Paul? At that point. We didn't have the injuries that we had.
No. But you're saying in retrospect, okay? Well, if you're going to play that game, if you're going
to
play Monday morning quarterback, who would the other safety have been?
Not Nat Burhey.
Yeah, but hold on, Len. Burhey got hurt though.
We didn't know the extent of Burhey's.
But Burhey got hurt before you finalized your 53-man roster.
You're wanting to play Monday morning quarterback here. That's what you just said. And if you do that, Who would the starting safety have been in Collins' spot for 16 games? Were you calling Herb Welch and Kenny Hill back? Bill Currier, perhaps?
No. I'm saying you don't draft the strong. I'm saying one school of thought is you don't draft a strong safety at that second spot.
So who would have started those 16 games?
That's another school of thought, Paul.
But in retrospect, who would have started those 16 games if not Landon Collins? How many safeties did they have that started other games for the team this year?
Who started every game? Nobody but Collins.
So where would they be if he wasn't on the team?
The point is, in April, at the end of April, when we made that choice, we had safeties on the team.
Unknown safeties.
But they were unproven commodities.
Totally unproven.
In fairness, they were a lot of young guys who had upside, don't get me wrong, but very limited experience on the field, let alone starting experience.
Len, here's the one thing that makes Landon Collins a very rare commodity on this team. When they drafted him and they traded up in the second round to get him, they said he's a legitimate pro prospect and he's going to start right away. And boy, we hope we get 16 games out of him. And guess what? He gave you exactly what was advertised.
He gave you 16 starts. If he gives us that for 6 years, Paul, which was your – I don't care where we picked him. That was a great pick.
Right.
I'm just saying, going into that draft, Paul, you don't trade up in the second round and lose your fourth-round pick coming off a 6-10 season for Lance's analysis of an in-the-box safety. Maybe we didn't know he was an in-the-box safety,
Paul,
which is even worse.
Len, we're also going on based on 16 games. Remember, it's easy to say something like that now. You know, two or three years down the road, you may say that was an extremely valuable.
Was more than an in-the-box safety? It's okay.
It doesn't matter. He is the only safety on this team who not only played 16 games, but actually has upside that you can say, hey, you know what? We got a pretty good feeling this guy's going to be around 5 or 6 years from now as a bona fide starter in this league. I can't say that about any of the other five safeties who are currently under contract.
Len, we've seen players in the NFL.
On April 28th of last year.
Oh, my goodness.
If you thought Landon Collins was worth trading up for in the second round, coming off a 6-10 season, and lose your fourth-round pick,
I thought it was a terrific trade at the time, and right now I'm still thinking it's probably going to be a pretty darn good trade over the course of time.
I'm hoping so. And listen, he's part of my future too, Paul.
Okay.
We need to see progress. We need to see progress out of the guy.
Well, he only played 16 games, Len, though.
Two schools of thought.
That's enough.
You don't trade up to the second round for a strong safety.
All right,
secondly, if he starts for 6 years, hey, it's a great pick. Can I say something about
real quick, Len, because I got to get one more guy in, so real quick.
Okay. I like the resume, and Paul will recognize this. We talked last week about this, Paul. I like that New York. I like that Northeast mentality. I like what he's done with the two head coaching jobs. But I'll tell you what, I would turn over every possible stone to find out why this guy, in the middle of his career, quits his job when there's only 32 of these in the whole world. What does he think? He's going to walk out and find another one right away? Man, if we pick Marone, we better have a pretty good handle on that
I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. We talked about that early. I'm sure that's part of the equation in terms of the interview. All right, Joe in New York, he gets the last word. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? I just joined the show 15 minutes ago, so I'm not sure if you guys touched on Marone or not. But my concern with Marone is the fact that when coaches come in, you know, to coach a team, you know, they want to kind of put their brand on that team. And since NASA played for him at college, do you think he would try to start NASA over Eli? Just so he can make that his team.
Joe.
Because when
Joe, I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue, and I've heard other people bring this up. If you go back to that draft, Doug Marone and the Buffalo Bills had every opportunity to draft Ryan Nassib. And they chose not to draft Ryan Nassib. So using that philosophy, if he was that high on Ryan Nassib, wouldn't you think that he would have campaigned for Buffalo to bring him in? The fact that he didn't would lead me to believe that I don't think Eli Manning has anything to worry about.
We don't know. He may have and been overruled.
It's true.
We don't know the answer
right,
to that.
You're right. There's that side of the equation. But I think any head coach that gets this job looks at Eli Manning
starting
as the starting quarterback. In all fairness, regardless of the background information.
I understand what you're saying, and yeah. I agree with that 100%. But I do believe in at some point in the back of Eli's mind, he's got to be thinking, too, about his job security for the next coach that comes in, because that he's not their guy, so, you know, they weren't drafted.
Well,
by
no, but Eli Manning is the franchise's guy. He is the organization's guy, so he's not worried about that. What he's more worried about is making sure that he gets all the nuances of whatever that potentially new offense is. That's what he's worried about, studying film like I do.
Okay. I just want to see what your point was on that, and I'll let you guys go. I know you guys are kind of close, so thanks a lot, and you guys have a good day.
All right, you as well, Joe, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. They certainly have invested a lot in Eli Manning, and he is, without a doubt, the franchise quarterback. With that being said, certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets, an energetic, engaging conversation, a lot of philosophical thoughts by you on the phones, by you on Twitter as well. We'll continue the conversation throughout the course of the week. Big Blue Kickoff Live, by the way, we're with you every single weekday during the course of the offseason. We're not going anywhere. Noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, we'll cover all the offseason angles, the latest on the coaching search, and so forth. Hashtag Giants Chat if you want to reach us off the air. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.